content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Margaret Roach's book, A Way to Garden, a hands-on primer for every season. And we're starting today with the chapter Birth, and that's for March and April, things to do in the garden. And we start with Gardening for Birds. I always say the birds taught me to garden as I watched their interaction with what I planted and the insects that showed up too. Some the birds ate, others pollinated plants whose seeds or fruits the birds then ate. Birds became my first really intimate window into the web of life or food chain. 30-plus years ago, I didn't know much about plants or much about birds. I knew I liked both of them, however, and with that very loosey-goosey mission, at least subconsciously in mind, I want to be surrounded by plants and birds. I set about to make a garden, simply wondering, what plants will help me attract more birds? Ended up bringing about 65 species into the yard yearly, including many who nest in it or at its perimeter. There is a more orderly way to go about attracting birds, and in hindsight, I can recommend these steps. Adjust your mindset. Birds, gardening, and not so coincidentally, what's now often called pollinator gardening or habitat gardening, are all really food chain gardening. The bottom line, it's all about growing bugs. Without beneficial insects, a lot of flowering plants don't get pollinated. Plus, most songbird species are at least in part insectivorous, even those that are vegetarians, as adults generally feed their young some insects, especially caterpillars, and the baby food of the songbird set. Many are so insect-dependent that they migrate southward in late summer or autumn, when insects wane up north. No chemicals, please. This organic commitment should be implicit in the mandate to grow more bugs. But just in case, no chemicals. Even the safest ones can indiscriminately kill beneficials or taint soil and water. Assess your habitat. As the ornithologist Pete Dunne has written, birds are almost always where they are supposed to be. If you are adjacent to forest, as I am, not a wetland, you won't get ducks. The only things quacking in my backyard are wood frogs in March and April, in mating season. No matter how many bluebird boxes or purple martin houses you erect, if the overall environment isn't right, they won't move in. Bobolinks, a grassland species, won't adapt to half-acre or mowed lawn. Get informed and target the right species with the right actions. Sign up for a free account on ebird.org. When you go to create a checklist of birds you saw, eBird will offer up a list of birds known in your area, not all suited to your precise backyard, of course. Find the website of your nearest Audubon chapter or sanctuary or a local bird club and ask for their species list. 2, scanning it for birds that match your kind of sight. This takes homework in books or on websites like Cornell Lab of Ornithology, all about birds, but the sooner you learn the local birds and their life histories and preferences, the better. Shortcut: go to a club meeting of keen local birders and ask questions. Start imagining the garden as a giant, year-round living bird feeder. Plant so that it offers quality food at different times of the year for nesting times. In summer, big doses of fuel to support migration's energy demands, and persistent fruits and seeds to survive on in winter. A saner cleanup style, too. Leaves standing whatever still has wildlife values till it doesn't. Strive for what scientists call functional redundancy of each moment in the food supply. Not just one, but several plantings representing different species that can support birds in each month, in case one crop fails. Chart what you have to offer insects and in turn birds in each month, and deliberately order plants to fill in where there are not multiples. An informal first goal to set is to have something blooming in every possible month your climate allows. Information on what blooms when is readily available. Then work on achieving a similar succession of fruit and seeds, which will require more investigation. Water is needed 12 months a year. I am often asked what my most effective bird plant is, and I say water. Water is also a critical factor for many hard-working insects, like dragonflies. Keep a hole in the icy water garden surface with a bubbler or floating de-icer. Even a bird bath can be kept unfrozen with a special device. Reduce mowed lawn, which lacks any biodiversity or potential to grow bugs. Create more edge habitat called ecotone, the transition zone between two different systems, like where woods meet field in nature. This requires a layered style of planting, not disparate trees or shrubs stuck in the middle of dimensionless mowed lawn. Edge habitat is where the action is for insects and therefore birds too. Native heavy planting in particular increases biodiversity, which should surprise nobody. An example, Audubon says that native trees, including oaks, willows, birch, and maples, and various native herbaceous plants, host numerous protein-rich caterpillar species vital to birds raising families. Figure in elements of evergreen cover, particularly conifers, which provide shelter from wind and cold, nesting sites for some species, and seed-filled cones for others. Install nest boxes, but only if you plan to maintain them, for cleanliness and if the proper design to match a target species needs is used and properly sited, with predator deterrence installed. NestWatch.org's Right Bird, Right House search tool identifies cavity nesters in your area and often plans for the right houses for each. Cialis.org, that's Cialis.org, specializes in everything bluebird. Better yet, cultivate a snag, turning a dying or dead tree into a wildlife tree in which natural decay or the work of woodpeckers or a combination can create nest sites. More than 40 species of birds alone, not including the woodpeckers themselves or many other animals, nest in woodpecker cavities in North America. Snags have many other functions. Keep feeders clean and well stocked. Even if supplemental feeding can be offered only in the off-season as here, because of active black bears mid-March through Thanksgiving or so, place feeders and bird baths either closer than 2 feet from buildings or 30-plus feet away to reduce deadly high-speed window strikes when birds are en route. Keep your cat indoors and also safeguard birds from window strikes. When birds fly into glass after being confused by its mirror effect, the outdoor cats are two leading causes of songbird death. No outdoor cats, period. And consider special fiberglass exterior screens, streamers, or other preventative tactics if your windows are causing such deadly incidents. And also for, this is a side note, that for the windows, if you do find the birds hitting your windows, just put those stickers. They have lots of stickers at, like, Birds or Us or nature places or even hardwares to stick on your windows so that the birds won't see that that reflection. And next, watch birds, count birds, know birds, love birds. Join eBird and Project Feeder Watch online and the Great Backyard Bird Count and the local bird club. Our next topic is powerhouse bird plants. The following lists of mostly native woody and herbaceous plants are largely chosen for fruit or seed, meaning that they are key beneficial insect plants too, since they flower first. Appropriate species will differ by region. The Native Plant Finder, launched in 2018 on the National Wildlife Federation website, searchable by zip code, can help you find yours. Some personal notes. Though I never see them on recommended lists, I also rely on my native Eastern Aralia, Spikenard, the herbaceous A. racemosa, and a native from farther south, woody A. spinosa, called the Devil's Walking Stick or Hercules Club. Both require ample space. Pollinators and then birds, especially thrush relatives and cedar waxwings, go mad. Though not listed in bird plant references, either my observation is that even the vegetable garden can contribute to diversity. Umbel flowers, parsley, chervil, carrot, and fennel, and those in the brassica family, arugula, turnips, and radish, are especially attractive to beneficial insects. I let a portion of each past edible row bolt to attract them. And here's a list of some woody plants that fit that list. Is shadebush and serviceberry, chokeberry, conifers including spruce and pine for shelter, nest sites, and seeds, dogwood, shrubs or trees, holly including winterberry, eastern red cedar, spice bush, crabapple, and not the native one. I'm not sure what she means by that, but bayberry, Virginia and thicket creepers, wild black cherry, oaks for insects and caterpillars, plus acorn production, sumac, elderberry, blueberry or huckleberry, and some Asian species are invasive in certain areas, so be careful of viburnum, and wild grape. Now, herbaceous plants, here's a little list, is daisy-like flowers, like coneflowers, sunflower relatives, asters, and for insects, appeal and seeds. Wild grasses, Schizacharium, Andropogon, Butalo, Panicum, Sorgastrum. Hummingbird plants are Monarda, Lobelia, Penstemon, Salvia, and Lonicera. Mints like Pinanthenum and, again, the Monardo are very pollinator-friendly. And I guess these words you could ask at any garden center and they'll show you the plants. Now we'll go on to when to start seeds. Need help remembering when it's safe and smart to start your first spring sowing of vegetable, flower, and herb seeds indoors and out. And they have a chart, but it's a very long chart. So I'll just read what she talks about. I find it helpful to jog my memory around now and then organize my seed packets according to what needs sowing and when. Using any such calculator begins with knowing the final spring frost date in your hardiness zone. If you don't, a Google search can remedy that. Then it's simple math. Besides my last frost date, about May 15th, and I think here in North Carolina it's April 15th or 17th, I need to know the number of weeks indoors a particular crop requires from sowing to transplant time. Say 6 weeks for a tomato. The last variable is relative to that frost date, when a tomato seedling can safely go outdoors, 1 to 2 weeks after the danger of frost is past. From mid-May, then, I count back 6 weeks, bringing me to April 1st, or thereabouts. Then I add 1 to 2 weeks to adjust for the post-frost transplant margin. Tomato sowing time here, about April 15th, or set out in late May. My chart date suggests the earliest springtime sowings, but there is no hard and fast rule. Whether you prefer to a 6 to 8 week tomato transplant, I like smaller, or whether lettuce needs 4 to 6 weeks indoors, or if you don't give salad a head start, but direct sow it. This is my best guidance, not doctrine. Other factors, using protective row covers, can let you cheat on the earliest transplant dates by as much as 2 weeks, which is especially helpful for tender seedlings like melon or insect-prone brassicas and cucurbits. Choose the chart with the last frost date closest to the one in your zone and adjust the results accordingly. Then scan the next to last column, and this is all about this chart, which I'll read a few usual ones that most people use in a moment. Then scan the next to last column, so indoors from two, for crops where the seeding action overlaps. And for example, tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants could be sown at the same time, or broccoli, chard, lettuce, and mustard could be lumped. Write such potential groupings down so you can mark your calendar for a few group sowing dates, simplifying indoor production, which began with onions and leeks. Finally, with starred items, look at the last column to identify what you could direct sow into the garden on a common date, like beets, kale, lettuce, mustard, without a head start indoors. Many crops that you want available over a long season, like salad, carrots, beets, bush beans, cilantro, etc., are best sown in succession, a small amount every 2 weeks, starting at the date on the chart, which I'll read soon. In some climates, a later sowing timed for fall or winter harvest may do better than a spring sown one, or you can get a second sowing in of, say, peas that you also sowed in spring and then pulled. And there is a large chart here. And if anyone wants any specific crops, please let me know, and I will go back to it and read it. And then I'll give you some weeks indoors before transplanting. And it says transplant date, and it's relative to the final frost. So indoors and transplant dates. Okay, so we start with, I think, beets or beans, bush or pole beans. And those, they say, you should directly put them in the earth whenever you're ready at the frost date, which I think for us is April, and I'll check on that. There's broccoli, and that's 4 to 6 weeks indoors before you put those out. Carrots are put right into the ground. Let's see, what else would be most? Lettuce is 4 weeks before. And let's see, peas put right into the ground. Radishes and spinach are direct sow, so don't grow those in the house. Carrots, arugula, beans, they're starting over again. All right. So we'll go to the next topic, and that's 18 seed starting tips. And I think, we'll read a little bit of that. And we'll probably repeat this in the next program. Becoming a confident seed starter unlocks possibilities. You can try any catalog offering, no longer being limited to the local garden center selection. Nervous? Remember, in nature, seeds sow themselves successfully. usually emerging when the soil is moist and started to warm. Details of spacing and depth vary by crop. Your seed packet or the catalog website may offer specifics. Basic guidance, except with large seeds like peas, beans, and squash, which I direct sow outdoors and deeper, I make a shallow depression or furrow, press the seeds gently in, spacing according to packet directions, and lightly cover with more planting medium. If you're only going to do one thing on the following list to improve seed starting results, focus on the light. Too little light is the most common reason for seed growing failure by home gardens. And the seed starting tips are: don't rush. Get your timing right for each crop. Don't be cheap. Buy fresh seed if there's any doubt. Check on the average visibility of a given type of leftover seed in the but also ask yourself how well you really cared for it. Seed is alive, but not if you left it in the hot, humid garage all summer. Don't use just any potting soil. Some may be too coarse, but a fresh bag of sterile medium labeled germination mix or seed starting mix. Cleanliness counts. When reusing flats, trays, cells, and pots, wash with a dilute bleach solution, or at least hot soapy water. Do pre-moisten the mix before putting in flat or cell so it's no longer powdery dust. Run water from the kitchen sink sprayer or the outdoor nozzle into the plastic soil bag ahead of time. Massage and turn the bag to distribute. Then repeat a few times and let it sit a while. Do use bottom heat from a germinating mat and a dome lid or plastic wrap to create a germination chamber of around 78 degrees Fahrenheit. But don't leave the heat mat plugged in or the lid on once the plants have emerged. Seedlings don't like it as warm or moist as seeds trying to sprout do. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138.